Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
You might remember back in 2006, the then presenter of Top Gear, Richard Hammond, was involved in a serious car crash while filming for the show. He was driving a jet-powered car and travelling at nearly 320 miles an hour when he had a tyre blowout. Now, he was cut out of the car and evacuated. He spent 2 weeks in a coma. Doctors gave him a slim chance of survival. Well, he did survive, and in a video released on his social media earlier this week, Richard Hammond takes us through what he experienced while he was in that coma and how his wife helped to bring him back to consciousness. Let's take a listen.
I finally woke and I shared with my wife, Mindy, a dream I'd been having, a really, really, really vivid one, probably partly on account of the morphine. And in my mind, I'd been walking these hills here in the Lake District overlooking Buttermere. I was having a lovely time strolling along. And gradually, I got a growing sense of, you know, when you know you're in trouble, when you're a teenager staying out just that bit too late, you're not definitely in massive trouble yet, but you're in a bit of trouble. And that feeling grew and grew. And I walked up this slope where I am now towards this tree, this exact tree. And as I got closer and closer to the tree, that sense of, ooh, I really am in trouble. I'm going to be shouted. I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. Grew and grew until eventually in my dream, I turned back. I didn't walk round this tree and carry on, and I woke. And that's the dream I told Mindy about. Mindy told me her side of the story because at the same time I was having that dream, she'd been called into intensive care and told, Mrs. Hammond, I'm really sorry, things aren't looking good. All his vitals, they were monitoring everything. I was on full life support and breathing apparatus and the lot. And she was told, it's not looking good, we think we're going to lose him. And she said, is there anything I can do? And they said, well, no, not really. And she said, can I shout at him? And they said, yeah, whatever. And she asked, no, I mean really, really shout at him. And she did. And apparently she roared and screamed and swore at me, don't you dare die. And that's when I turned back from this tree in my dream. And that's when I woke. It's true. I mean, I didn't really come up to this hill and walk around this tree. I was in a coma in Leeds. But my mind did, and my mind is who I am. I know that very well, having damaged it with a frontal lobe brain injury and spent a long time recovering. And I've taken huge solace from that ever since, because that was my last thought.
Isn't that interesting? Richard Hammond's experience there. So how much do people hear and feel when they are in a coma? Here, hopefully, to answer some or all of that is Ger Curley, Professor of Anaesthesia and Critical Care at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. And Ger is also a consultant at Beaumont Hospital. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
It's fascinating, that insight into what it was like and that level of consciousness.
Yes, indeed. And in our intensive care unit, we see patients with traumatic brain injury on a very regular basis, unfortunately. And the experience of coma, it differs from person to person. Some people will remember some events around them while they're in a coma, and others don't. But essentially, a coma is a state of unconsciousness. A person is unresponsive and they cannot be woken. And it arises because of a head injury most often, but also other conditions like stroke or a severe brain infection like meningitis. And someone in a coma, they're unconscious, they have minimal brain activity. They're alive, but they cannot be woken up and they show no signs of awareness. But of course, that occurs on a spectrum. So some patients will have some awareness of what is going on around them, especially when the voices of their loved ones are around. The tone of voice of somebody that they know is really it's something that is embedded in the brain very very clearly. Mm-hmm.
And can you tell, Ger, where someone is on the spectrum when they are in a coma? Can you tell what their level of awareness is?
So a really important part of caring for these patients is assessing their level of consciousness on a very regular basis. So we assess whether they're able to open their eyes, whether they're able to move to command, and whether they're able to speak to us. And that forms part of something called the Glasgow Coma Scale Score, and it's a central part of caring for these patients, because if a patient is improving, that's a good sign. We know that consciousness perhaps is returning, but if their level of consciousness is decreasing, we need to know about that, because there may be interventions that we can apply that are investigations that we need to do to determine what's going on.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about what Richard Hammond had to say, that he felt like he was walking up to this familiar tree that he has walked up to so many times before, felt like he was in trouble and turned back? Meanwhile, in the hospital room, his wife is shouting at him and telling him not to die.
So it's a very common experience for patients that they have what we call delirium, or they have hallucinations, they have dreams, they sometimes can hear voices that aren't there, and then sometimes they can hear the voices of their loved ones. And so in our intensive care unit, about at any one time, three quarters of the patients that we care for will have a similar experience. We always tell relatives it's really important to talk to patients when they come in, even if it appears that they're not, that a patient is unresponsive. In particular for relatives, it is important, because the sensation of the voice, of touch, can help patients to return to consciousness. And in fact, research has shown that that relatives can assist in returning patients to more normal consciousness by speaking to them.
It's just interesting, if the brain has slowed down to the extent that the brain has shut down as well, and you can't wake up from this, there's potential there, are you saying, in all cases, for the hearing function to be operational?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, brain injury occurs on a spectrum. So while at one end of the spectrum you can have a really profound brain injury, and there is no possibility that a patient can hear or see. But in between wakefulness and a really severe injury, there are those zones where patients can potentially hear. Again, it's really important for us as healthcare providers that even though a patient may appear unconscious, that they can perhaps hear something of what we're saying. Of course, the other aspect of that is that a lot of the patients that we have in the ICU, we give them medications to induce unconsciousness or coma, and that's done therapeutically. We're trying to shut down the brain to protect it, because when there's a serious injury like a traumatic brain injury, it's important to try to protect the brain, because it can swell, there can be reduced blood flow to the brain, and if we give medications to induce a coma, you're reducing the activity in the brain, you're reducing the demand for blood flow, and you're protecting the brain while it has a chance to recover.
So when you put a patient into an induced coma, does the body and brain react differently in that instance than it would if it occurred because of an injury?
Well, the biggest difference between an induced coma and a coma that's induced by an injury is that, of course, we can reverse an induced coma. There are similarities, but there are differences. One is a chemically induced reversible coma, and the other occurs because there's injury. there's injury there, and that's not readily reversible. You have to allow a period of time, and it depends, of course, on the degree of injury. But in both instances, there is a reduced activity in the brain. There's reduced overall electrical activity in the brain. So there are similarities, but of course, with an induced coma, we can turn that off.
Mm-hmm. What is the brain doing during a coma?
So if we look at the electrical activity in the brain, it is reduced. So it depends on the degree of injury, but the most profound degrees of injury, there will be very or no electrical activity there. But lesser degrees of injury, you will have some activity. The consciousness is for us all to be awake, for us all to be aware, we have to have these connections in our brain. So there's a connection between the area of the brain called the cerebral hemispheres, which is kind of at the top of the brain, and the area of the brain called the brainstem. So these connections are really important to maintain wakefulness. And if there's injury to the brain, there's a disconnection there.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be electrical activity going on and activity in regions of the brain, but there won't be the connections there. So there can be dreams, there can be hallucinations, there can be the sensation of pain or discomfort. That can all be going on, but it's just not all connected well. So sometimes patients are just not able to perceive what the correct sound is, or are not able to respond to command. They can tell us afterwards that they heard us telling them to move their arm or move their leg, but they just weren't able to
respond. It's just, I mean, I think you described it as delirium. Richard Hammond described it as a daydream. Is it possible that he might have been walking towards death, and somewhere in his brain he heard his wife's voice telling him not to do it, and he made a choice?
I think that it's unlikely. When patients are when they're going to die from a brain injury, it's usually a very, very profound injury, and there is usually no awareness at that time. But what is certainly true is that listening to the voices of loved ones can help us to wake. I'm not sure that that listening to the voice of loved ones would be the difference between dying and not dying in an intensive care unit.
Yeah,
but certainly.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, you're saying if you're injured badly enough, the choice is not going to be there for you.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Ger, it's fascinating to talk to you, and thank you very much for explaining all of that to us. Ger Curley, who's Professor of Anesthesia and Critical Care at the Royal College of Surgeons and also a consultant in intensive care and anesthesia at Beaumont Hospital. Coming up, we'll be hearing about the extraordinary story and legal appeal involving Shamima Begum.